And welcome to the Tales from the Longbox podcast. This is episode 137, interview with Paul Tobin and Colleen Coover. Did I get that right? I should have asked you first. Did I pronounce that right?
Really close. It's Colleen, but whatever.
Colleen, okay. My bad. I should have asked that before I started. Anyway, I'm Chris Mosby.
We'll take that on editing, Chris. This is Caleb.
Yeah. And I'm Murray Fox.
And as we said, we've invited a couple of guests for an interview this episode, and they can introduce themselves and tell us about yourselves.
Hi, I'm Colleen Coover. I'm an artist of comics.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah.
She draws all the comics,
all of the
every
comics.
Single comic.
There you go.
Excellent. I hate this when I have to remember what I've done.
Little Bandette.
Yes, that's why we have you on.
Well.
And recently I did an episode of Batman 66.
Oh, really?
And previous to that, we did our graphic novel together, Gingerbread Girl, and Banana Sunday, and before that, Small Favors, which was an adult comic that I did. That was my first big solo thing. Did I forget something? Bunch of Marvel stuff.
Yeah, a bunch of Marvel stuff in there. That's the main projects.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Paul Tobin. I'm the writer for Bandette. I'm also currently writing Witcher for Dark Horse. I'm working on a Prometheus Aliens Predator crossover for Dark Horse.
Wow.
Oh, we co-wrote that Adventure Time thing that's currently coming out.
All right, we have an Adventure Time series coming out.
Adventure Time Flipside.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
With Jin Clark as the artist.
Right. I also work for Angry Birds, a bunch of projects I can't talk about.
You were joking about that when you said that.
I probably produce more Angry Birds comics than any other project I'm on.
Wow. That's cool.
I didn't even know those existed. I've just been educated.
They kind of exist so far, but
are they published in the States yet?
A lot of them come out in albums in Europe, some in Japan, but it's moving its way towards America, and IDW is going to start putting them out here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I never joke about writing.
Is it a material difference, or is it going to be the reprint, or are they reprinting the stuff that's already gone on in the other countries?
I'm not real sure I am sure what our plans are, but I can't be specific about it yet.
No, that's fine.
It's gonna be a mix of a whole bunch of different types of material. We've got some, like, probably fairly unexpected stuff coming out, so.
But you're getting paid, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's me and Jeff Parker is the other main writer.
Oh, okay. Looks like
speaking of Batman 66.
Looking at your blog page, you've done some Bionic Woman.
Yes, Bionic Woman. Tons of other projects.
Too many to remember.
Yeah. Oh, and I have a novel out. Prepare to Die is a novel.
Yeah, I was just looking at that.
And I will have more novels being announced soon. So.
Cool.
That's more of what I do.
Yeah.
I was reading Bionic Woman for the longest time, and along with Six Man or the Bionic Man or the Kevin Smith Bionic Man stuff. And,
I just met Lee Majors last weekend, as a matter of fact.
Awesome.
Yeah, he was at the Planet Comic Con in Kansas City. Mm. So that was
I had such a crush on him when I was like six.
He was my hero, so he really was. Let's see, Witcher. Yeah, I just started playing that first game not too long ago. They had a sale on Steam. That's a pretty good game.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. And as a character, he's a lot of fun to write. And
yeah, I bet.
So
let's see, Falling Skies, which is one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun project, and that's where I hooked up first with Juan Ferreira.
Oh, okay.
My artist on Falling Skies, but then I brought him over to Colder, my creator-owned horror series over at Marvel, at Dark Horse.
Yeah, okay. I see it here.
Yeah, Juan and I co-own that, and we're having a lot of fun with that, and there's going to be more of that starting next, late this year, probably. But Juan right now he's also my artist for the Prometheus book, so we need to finish that up first before we can really get into it.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
You I'm sorry, Colleen. I apologize. Go ahead.
Oh, more creepiness from Juan, because he is a monster.
Yes, he's a monster who draws monsters well.
Yeah, I can looking at the cover of the Colder Trade. That is kind of creepy looking.
Yeah, that was a fun one for us. That gets a lot of attention.
So you go from the creepy stuff like that, but you're also writing incredibly, and excuse my fanboyish statement here, but the incredibly cute Bandette from Monkey Brain. I mean, it seems like two divergent. A lot of writers get stuck in one genre, mm-hmm. like Steve Niles, a great writer, but he seems to keep getting horror this, horror that.
Yeah, he's really into horror. I mean, Steve's a friend, so yeah. I would like to see him do something else. And his comedy is, I mean, as a person, he's very wry and a lot of fun to talk with. So mm-hmm. I'd like to see him expand that. But he has so much fun doing horror that there's not really any reason for him to move out of it. And but for me, I need kind of something to keep me fresh every day. It helps me to be able to move between like Colder and let's say Bandette. It keeps both of them fresh. And you know, I'm just like, and we all have our different moods day by day. We're not like one set of emotions. So
right.
I can move back and forth. And it's more fun for me that way. I know it does confuse readers sometimes though, because like I got, when I first, when I was working in Marvel Adventures, the all ages, like basically running the all ages line at Marvel, everybody sort of thought of me as the all ages guy for a while. And then I started doing Colder and everybody was like, what is going on? This is good, but this is such a change for Tobin. And then I did Colder for a while and then I moved on to Bandette and people were like, what's this? Tobin's the horror guy. What's going on now? They kept wanting to slot me in, but I don't really enjoy being slotted in.
You don't slot well.
I don't slot well.
No.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame you. I wouldn't like that either.
Right.
I'm looking forward to during the research for this, it came up that Bandette is getting collected, which I am completely jazzed about because I can finally share it with my daughters without throwing it on their readers. So that's going to be – I'm so looking forward to that.
It's already out.
Oh, it's out. Look at
it's
me.
Out. I'm
for quite a while.
I am Mr. Behind the Times. Okay.
Yeah, I totally missed that too. We were just looking at your stuff on Dark Horse and saw that it was, you know, at least that they have it solicited anyway. We didn't get that far. That's cool.
We're already talking when the second one's going to come out.
Oh yeah, I see that publication date, November 13th. Wow, we are behind.
It's all red and it's hardcover and it's got. Stuff in it. It's very pretty.
It has tons of extra stuff in it.
Well, that's cool. It's we'll have to get that.
It's only like $15 cover price. You can probably get it cheaper online.
I'm on Amazon as we talk. So
yes, exactly.
And is it oversized? Bandette seems to me to be a book that would look great like in the Asterix and Obelix size books or the Tintin size books. Or is it play? Is it regular?
It probably would look good oversized, but it's not.
Yeah, it's
looks good anyway. I'm just thinking it would look amazing in the.
I think it says here 6x9.
Yeah.
Yeah, the art size is 6x9.
Okay.
Yeah, that's actually the size she draws at. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes it easy then.
Oh, so they're not shrinking it down for the okay.
Yeah,
no.
That's good.
No. Those are the original files that I send to Comixology, so it's all the same stuff.
Oh, that's cool. So you got when we had the pleasure of talking with Chris Roberson and Allison about how long ago was that? Maybe 6-8 months ago, something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They said they just slapped their label on the top of it, but you guys get a complete and utter control over it. Is that 100? That's correct, right?
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, they don't interfere at all. They just put it up basically.
And they came to you and asked you guys to do something, or did you pitch them?
We've been friends for years, so when they decided to start Monkey Brain, they came to us and said we need some, we want a launch project, a couple of, they talked to I forget like how many people to start.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. And you guys were the first one they put out, right?
We were among the first. Yeah.
The first I thought there. I couldn't remember if there was just one or two or three that they put out at the same time.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly. I know that I think was Amelia Cole one of them, or was
Amelia
that a one?
Yes, Amelia Cole. I'm a big fan of that too.
Edison Rex was definitely one of the ones.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I've forgotten about that one. Yeah.
Aesop's Fables was in the
game.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I think they had a really good game plan in that is that they wanted a lot of content that they could put out under one umbrella,
mm-hmm.
so that it would be an announcement of substance when the announcement happened. So,
mm-hmm.
so they went to people that they knew could produce something professional and people they liked.
And Chris and I have always been big fans of publishing houses that have an extremely varied amount of product. And it's like what we're talking about with like my writing. It's like as a reader, there are days when I couldn't think of anything I'd want to read more than horror. But then there are other days like, you know, I just want something kind of light and fun. And too many companies just pick their own particular genre and push that forward. But Monkey Brain and Chris and Allison really wanted that wide breadth of material. So rather than gear it themselves towards their mood at the moment, they just picked creators that they liked and said, just have fun doing the project that you've long wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a self-professed superhero junkie. I admit it. But you're absolutely right. There are days when I don't want all the capes and stuff, and it's nice to pick up something like a High Times. Not High Times. That's wrong. Sorry. High Times. High Times, but different podcast.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You were not in Colorado.
I am not in Colorado.
High Times. Chris Sebel is another friend of mine. And he's got that Dead Letters coming out, and I've read it, and it's actually really good. His ear for dialogue really shows in it. So.
Wow, that's cool.
And Chris Roberson and Chris Sebel are two of the other writers on the Prometheus, Aliens, Predator.
Oh, big really?
Thing. Yeah, the fourth is Josh Williamson. We all live in town. Editor Scott Alley, because there needed to be there, we have ongoing summit meetings over at Scott's house, and because it's such a, you know, detail oriented crossover where we need to make sure that we're all on the same page, Scott wanted artists, or I mean writers, that were all in the same town, all here in Portland, so that we could easily, you know, rather than send off a letter to or an email to Britain, we could just say, I can just call up Chris Sebel and say, hey, meet me over at the Standard Bar, and we'll drink beers and discuss this and write everything off on our taxes and stagger home.
There you go. Nothing wrong with that.
It's a surprisingly efficient way to get things done.
Yep.
Yeah, I would imagine. I know we have a hard time with all the different time zones we're in just getting this podcast out, but so far we haven't missed one.
Cool.
So
in 3 years, you haven't missed one?
It's a very creator friendly area that you all are in, or creator area.
Well, yeah, we got one late one time, but we haven't missed any, so yeah.
Everybody misses a deadline sometimes.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
Portland's chock full of creators, so it's a lot of fun living here. That's part of one of the main reasons we actually moved here.
That's cool.
I grew up in Iowa, and
so did I.
There was Phil Hester.
Ah, yeah.
And Phil Hester and Phil Hester.
Okay. I just got through talking to him too. I got what was it? I got signed by him. One of the Green Arrow trades that I'd bought some art from him from about 2009 and his Invincible Universe trade number one. I got him to sign those. So.
Nice. Yeah, Phil's
yeah.
a great guy.
Yeah, he is. I've met him a couple of times. He's really nice, very gracious, and with his time and
he's like everybody's dad.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
He's the sweetest man.
Mm-hmm. Far sweeter than me. I agree.
Okay. Well, so
be on the show too.
Yeah, I'll have to get his contact info somehow and talk to him. One thing I wanted to ask is, because I've done some technical writing a while back and on different blogs and a book. I don't know. God, it's an ancient time ago. But anyway, one of the things I always ask writers is, and whether you believe in it or not, is writer's block. How do you deal with that?
I just keep going.
Keep going?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At a certain level, you might end up having to throw a bunch of junk out.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you keep writing, mm-hmm. There's a process that starts to happen where either you build your momentum back up, mm-hmm. or else, at least with me, and I know I have a lot of writer friends, there are going to be days when you sit down for 3 days and you produce nothing but junk, but on the fourth day you start to look at it and go, man, this is junk. But then you start to understand why it's junk, and you start right. to think, and you start to kind of have motion going, and I think that's really helpful. Mm-hmm. One of the ways that I avoid it, mostly when I'm working on prose, like on my novels, mm-hmm. is I have a minimum word total every day for them.
Right.
But I also have a maximum word total every day.
Oh, okay.
And it's really important to me because, like anybody else, I if I don't have a maximum word total, I will write until the end of what's really fun to write.
Right.
So that would mean every single day I write until I get to the end of a cool part, mm-hmm. which means also every single day I start dead in the water.
Right.
Something to really avoid is starting dead in the water. But mm-hmm. if I have a maximum word total, then once I hit that maximum, I stop. Sometimes it's pretty much always right in the middle of a thought,
right
in the middle of action. And it's really easy to pick it up the next day and sort of keep that momentum going. Because really that's what writer's block is, mm-hmm. say, is the loss of momentum. It's not loss of talent. There's no way your talent went down. It's just the loss of momentum of writing.
So that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Right. So as long as you get that momentum going, you're cool.
And yeah, because I think I've had writer's block for about 3 or 4 years now, and that's exactly what it is just a loss of momentum.
Right. It's hard to get going again.
Yeah.
So basically, if you want to get over that, just consider you're going to write junk for a while. Mm-hmm. Except that you're going to write junk. It's okay. There's nothing wrong with writing junk.
Right. Hmm. Okay. Good. That's good. I appreciate that.
Sure.
So Colleen, do you follow that philosophy as well when you write?
I write in a lot different way than Paul. Paul is an unstoppable train that once you get him on the track, he just keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
When I write, it tends to be shorter stuff. It tends to be centered around sort of an idea or a concept, and then I sort of build it up, building a form out of clay. I also tend to write, when I'm writing comics, I write very visually, so sometimes I'll map out an outline for an idea I have by doing a quick sketch of each page. This would be like for an 8-page or a 10-page story. Now when we co-write, it's usually Paul takes the lead and I kibitz, and then we go back and forth and then we send it to the editor. But when I'm writing for myself, I can't think that I've ever written for another artist just on my own. I think I've only co-written with you. I can't think of any time. When I'm writing for myself, I do write a full script, but it's usually with a really very good idea of what I'm going to draw. And occasionally I've found myself writing things that if somebody else wrote for me, I would be like, why did you write that? That is so hard to draw. That is impossible.
Right.
So you learn your own limitations.
So when you're drawing something that Paul's written or Jeff's written or the other writers that you've drawn for, does the writer ever come out and go, you know, we could go this route? Do you allow them to dictate what you're going to draw, or do you get some input?
It's, you know, with Paul and Parker, especially since they're right there, Paul's here, and then Parker is Parker and I have our desks right next to each other at the studio. It's funny because, especially with Parker, because he's also kind of a visual writer, I will show him what I'm doing sometimes, mostly just to brag, like, what a sweet thing, and then he'll either appreciate that or he'll make a suggestion. But when I'm working with Paul, he writes very detailed scripts, and I usually just follow those along. Occasionally, he'll write a description where I'll sort of internalize that and find a more efficient way to tell the story of what he's writing in his description. But it's usually just what he writes. When I'm working with someone who I'm not next to locally, I don't improvise. I always try to make sure that, because that's usually going to be a commercial project, like for Marvel or whatever. And I feel like it's my job to adapt their script as faithfully as possible. And because we don't have that sort of face-to-face relationship going on, I try to be as faithful as possible.
Can't get too much more commercial, though, than Adventure Time or Batman 66.
Well, yes and no. I mean...
Well, she didn't draw the Adventure Time.
No, though. I didn't. The Adventure Time. That's Wook-Jun Clark. And to be fair, I mean, the Adventure Time comics and the honchos at Cartoon Network have... The people at Boom and the people at Cartoon Network have made it clear that when they have these special events for Adventure Time, the artists can explore their own style as much as they like.
Mm-hmm. Well,
with the main comic story, I think they try to keep it more along on model to make it look more like the TV show, mm-hmm. But with the side stories, they get very adventurous. Oh, shoot! That was unintentional.
That's fine. We're okay with puns here.
Right, but and as commercial as you say as Batman 66 was, that was a very personal story for me to draw, and Jeff and I both. Watched the TV show when we were little kids, and I know for a fact that Batman, like Adam West type Batman, was the first drawing I ever did as a child.
Wow.
And it was just like a scribble, right? But I knew it was Batman because that's what I was drawing. So that was an intensely personal project. I probably wouldn't have had time to take the project if it hadn't been so important.
Uh-huh. That's cool. Yeah, we used to, I remember one time I got the opportunity to watch it with at my old nursery school with the kids there. They hadn't seen it, and they were the only Batman they knew at that point was the Michael Keaton one. It was 90, I guess, when I was over there. And they were... They loved it. They absolutely thought it was so cool.
It's still a lot of fun.
Yeah. That's probably the first show I saw that I remember when we got cable when I was a kid was that. And when my parents were dating, the show was actually on, and my dad would have to wait before they went on a date until that was over. So, yeah, that's kind of part of my life like that, too. I remember watching it in reruns when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too. That's one of the first shows I can remember watching in reruns and things like that.
I even remember what time it was on. It was on at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember, but...
Yeah, I don't remember it either.
And on the other channel was a Bugs Bunny show, so I would have to decide.
Oh, wow. What a terrible choice to have to make as a child.
It really was a bit of a Sophie's choice.
That's terrible.
Sophie's Choice. Wow, that's a... Ooh.
There you go. Yeah.
Wow. Colleen, you said you work at a like you do most of your work at a studio, I guess. What's your routine? Like, do you do any work at home, or do the both of you set aside like mornings or afternoons, or are you both at studios, or do some of you work at home? Like, how do you work out? Because I mean, it's not a job that's a 9-to-5 job unless you want to make it a 9-to-5 job. So how do you guys arrange your writing, drawing time?
Right. I do go to the studio pretty much every weekday.
Yep.
And I'll get there, you know, at 10 or 11 or 12, depending on the day. And then stay, you know, late into the evening, like 6 or 7. And I do most all of my drawing there. I do some work on the computer when I come home sometimes, like for coloring or lettering or stuff like that. But it is important for me to have a place to go to work, because if you work at home, then you can never leave work.
Yeah.
You know, you never leave your job. So it's important for me to have that separation. But Paul's a little different.
Yeah, I don't go into – I'm a member of the studio. It's Periscope Studio is the name of it. And I'm a member of it, but I really don't go in very often because I don't work very well there. I get pretty easily distracted.
I can understand that, yeah.
It's not any noise. I write a lot in cafes and things like that, and the noise level is about the same in a cafe versus Periscope. But at Periscope, everybody who speaks is a friend of mine, so, you know,
yeah.
My attention is always – you know, keen on them. So yeah, cafes. I write a lot here at home. Just around. During the summer, I like to ride around to the park and things like that.
Yeah.
Right there.
You have a tendency to like compartmentalize your day. So you work for a couple hours at home, and then you go to a cafe and work for a couple hours, and then maybe you'll take your laptop to the park and work for a couple of hours in the summer.
Yeah.
And then come back home and work for a couple of hours. So that sort of breaks up your day and makes it more manageable.
Yeah, it depends on what deadlines I have. I mean, right now I've been on like a pretty harsh deadline list for quite some time, so I've been writing a lot more at home.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, Carl Kiesel's in your studio. Wow, cool.
He is.
Mm-hmm.
Although he's got two babies now, so
yeah,
he doesn't come in nearly as much.
Yeah,
he has a toddler and a baby, I should say.
Oh. Wow. Hey, Steve Bieber. Wow. Oh, cool. I like it. Wow. Ron Randall. Goodness gracious. Cool.
I know,
studio.
Right?
You guys got some great people to talk with and bounce your thoughts off of here.
This is true, and you know, we've got veterans like Carl and Ron and Steve Lieber, and then we've got like webcomic, you know, upstarts like Erica Moen and Dylan McConis, and some people who are just at the very beginning of their careers. And what that does is it creates this sort of cross-pollination of skills. So, you know, if you want to know how to render a figure and lay out a page for a superhero comic, you go to Ron Randall and he will show you how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to know how to do a thing in like Photoshop, there's somebody else to go to for that. Like Ron Chan is really good for that. He's the artist on Plants vs. Zombies. You know, if we have a company needs some storyboards done, like an advertising company needs some storyboards done, and they go to the guy in the studio who they usually go to, but he's busy, he can say, "I'm busy, but my friend is available." So we also cross-pollinate jobs that way. It's a great thing. It's an office space in downtown Portland, and we share it with like I think like 25 people. We're not all there at the same time. But
the writers, there's Jeff Parker and me
you.
And Jeremy Barlow for now. And we don't share anything back and forth whatsoever. We're all grumpy and don't care what anybody else thinks about how we should write.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My idea. No, that's my idea. I have to ask, and I was going to say this later, but I kind of got to know. What's the deal with evil muffins?
What?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Wait,
okay.
You might have written something in a tweet about muffins. You talk about stuff.
I'll let you know that if it was in a tweet of mine, I'll tweet a lot. And by the time people reply, like a minute later, I've literally already forgotten what I tweeted. So the replies come in and I'm like, what are these people talking about?
Yeah,
dude, it's in your Amazon bio when I was reading a little bit about Prepare to Die in there. So,
yeah, the last tweet I see on your homepage is you made tuna fish sandwiches and PB&J sandwiches using tortillas instead of bread.
It rocked. It went really well.
Okay, well, I'm glad I got the evil muffin question out early. Okay.
You just inadvertently informed Colleen that I stole her tortillas.
So. Uh-oh. Thank
you for getting in trouble, guys.
Well, it's on the internet, so, I mean, come on.
Wait.
Colleen doesn't look at my Twitter.
Amazon.com thing.
So what does it say about evil muffins?
Oh, just if you look at the the writer bio for Prepare to Die, you have this little the little personal ramble about this that, and you do mention in there things that you like punching some type of dinosaur was the last thing you said, but before that you did mention something about evil muffins. So,
I bet you had just eaten wicked muffin.
Yeah, probably just ate a muffin. Writing bios is something we all hate, so we basically just empty the mental basket on it. So,
God, I hate writing bios.
Yeah, we would never have gathered that from your introduction. That would
yeah, I write the comics or draw them.
I don't even know what I do. I do things with pencils and colors. Okay. Yeah. It sounds like a really rough life when you're deciding whether you're going to write at the park or you're going to write at
Yeah, see, that right there, I've been thinking about a career change, and writing's what I've been thinking about, but I have absolutely nothing to, no way to get into it unless I actually do something, so.
That is actually the only way to get into
it.
Yeah,
I know, that's the thing, so. But, what...
And don't mistake my statement for confusion that what you guys do is incredibly hard and incredibly taxing. Yeah.
I know the writing is hard. That's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, drawing
is easy.
Oh. Yeah.
I'm sure it's hard. I mean, this is just like anything else. There's days you don't want to, but you have to.
You know, yeah. there are days where I am chugging along and I am just incredibly pleased with myself, but there are days where I'll like text Paul in the middle of the day and I'll be like, I have forgotten how to draw, my day is just completely gone to hell. So,
and writing, the tough part of writing for me, writing is no problem for me, but what I hadn't really understood before becoming a professional was how much of my day as a professional writer wouldn't have anything to do with writing whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I'll answer 20, 30 emails a day and talk to, this and that artist that has questions about a script and just all sorts of like things like that.
Notes from your editor.
Notes from the editor.
Notes from your agent.
Right.
So yeah, sometimes it'll be like 3:00 in the afternoon, I've been working for 5, 6, 7 hours and then it's like, now I have some time to write.
Yeah, yeah, I know exactly what that's like. I'm in the information technology field, and it seems like I spend more time doing emails than actually working.
Yeah, it's frustrating, isn't it?
It is very frustrating.
Yeah. So, Marie, is that the same for you? Do you actually get to teach only about an hour a day, and the rest of the time is...
Oh, that would be awesome. Teaching would be so much easier without those kids. I could just stand up there and jibber jabber and make lessons. No. Anyway, let's.
So, do you, Paul, given that, do you find it less productive if you're co-writing with someone then, or do you find it more productive?
Boy, you're gonna. I don't like co-writing.
Okay.
It's true. You really don't. And but there's a reason for that, and that's because you are you. you get focused.
Yeah, I get focused on it, and I have my ideas, and I'm I like one of my first Marvel projects was co-writing something with Jeff Parker, mm-hmm. who's a dear friend. I love the man, but we were pretty much literally at each other's throats. It got pretty vicious. And that was like just like a 22-page comic. We were co-writing a series. We, you know,
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. The Predator Prometheus aliens versus Predator thing that me and my friends are doing now, it's not quite co-writing. You know, we're not writing each other's mm-hmm. books per se, but we do get together and pass ideas back and forth quite a lot. And it's been a whole different type of co-writing, and I've actually really enjoyed this process, and it actually surprised me. I didn't really think I would, but and you know, maybe it's part and parcel of sitting around with three close friends and doing it. That might be part of it. But,
and then there's all that booze.
Yeah, they always serve booze.
Yeah, that always helps, doesn't it?
But yeah, it's been. I like to be a hermit sometimes as a writer, but this one I haven't been able to, and I've actually really enjoyed it. I mean, Chris Sebela has come up with some ideas that have completely changed what I'm doing, and Roberson has helped me a lot. And Josh's Predator series is going to be a lot of fun. When we all like collectively came up with the plot line for his, we all kind of like sat around going, well, now that we've decided that, we all want to write that one. It's so cool. You know? So, it's been a lot of fun. And we sit around with like the four of us over at Scott Alley's house and a wealth of the Dark Horse editors too. And the idea is just, you know, fling back and forth on how we should deal with certain things. And it's been really energizing.
But at the end of the day, even though you're collaborating for the overarching series, you're each going home and writing your own scripts.
Right. Nobody's writing my words.
Yeah. It's not like somebody else is coming in with a with a pen.
But it is still a collaborative process.
Right. Yeah.
So is it? And I know that you had mentioned outside this call that. Couldn't get too detailed, but is essentially three or four separate series, and they have a tie-in concept?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm writing a Prometheus. Josh Williamson is writing Predator. Mm. Chris Sebela is writing Aliens versus Predator, and Chris Roberson is writing Aliens.
Wow.
And then there's more secret stuff I can't talk about yet.
Cool.
And this is all I see. It's really gratifying to hear that you know, Dark Horse, you know, there was all the doom and gloom when the Star Wars licensing reverted over to Marvel last year.
You know, but I cut in there and say there wasn't that much doom and gloom at Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of doom and gloom from the media talking about, oh, Dark Horse is losing it, but it wasn't that big of a loss from Dark Horse's aspect.
They do a lot more than Star Wars, that's
right.
For sure.
And it was by no means their main bank whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also I think a lot of the unhappiness was because Dark Horse was doing really good comics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was the sadness from Dark Horse is losing titles that they were doing a lot of good work with. And, you know, Randy Stradley's an editor there and a friend of mine, and
mm-hmm.
he'd been doing, you know, editing Dark Horse for like
Star Wars for Dark Horse.
Yeah, editing Star Wars for like 20 years. So it was, you know.
Yeah, that's probably the most I've read of Dark Horse is the Star Wars stuff, and I've always enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, they did like before. It's kind of strange, but before Dark Horse took over Star Wars, almost all of the companies were doing like media properties at the time,
mm-hmm.
but the general way of doing them was just to kind of hand them off to whatever talent was around and not care that much. Cause most of the companies went, well, of course it's going to sell X numbers because it has this logo. But Dark Horse was one of the first people to say, and it's strange that it's such a revolutionary idea, but they said, hey, let's put good writers and good artists on and care about the book, and it was kind of strangely revolutionary at the time. So it is sad in a way, but it wasn't a business problem for Dark Horse whatsoever.
And collectively, one of our favorite writers between the three of us, John Ostrander, doing the stuff over there. So
yeah, I love his stuff. His Star Wars stuff is awesome.
Yeah, he's a solid guy. He's good with character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we're children of the 80s, the three of us, so.
Yeah. So, okay, one question I wanted to ask was, how did you come up with the concept for Bandette?
I remember distinctly we were walking to lunch one day. I had drawn a headshot of a character for my sketch blog. Because one day I was feeling very French, and I decided I wanted to draw the Frenchiest French character ever. So I drew this guy with this big, big nose and big ears and a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and I called him Police Inspector Bidet.
Jeez.
I can't even say it now.
Say it in French.
Inspector Bidet Belgique of the Special Police.
Okay.
Or I might have called him of the Sûreté at the time, but... so I was like, I want this guy. I want this guy. And then Paul was like, oh, and a young girl. And I was like, yeah, duh. So we knew there would be this police inspector and there would be a young girl character. And I think you already knew that you wanted to do like a Nancy Drew type.
Yeah. I have a lot of love for, like the young detective genre. So I sort of decided on something like a character sort of Nancy Drew-ish, but really if you do a Nancy Drew type character, you've got Nancy Drew.
Right, exactly.
So I went, well, what if she's on the other side of it, you know, how about if she's a thief? And so, you know, she became a thief, but I didn't want her to be a bad guy either. And I wanted her to be charming and fun and really full of life, so...
And we were also influenced by a character that neither of us have read any of her stories because all of her stories were in French.
Okay.
And we don't actually speak or read French. But there's this French character called Fantomette who has like a series of novels, sort of like Nancy Drew, except she wears this little outfit, like a mask and a cape.
Oh, okay.
So we sort of... And she's sort of a detective type.
I really don't know what she is, but I can't read the story.
But she has, like, friends that help her out, much like Nancy Drew has George and Bess help her out.
Mm-hmm.
So we sort of wrapped all that together and came up with this thief, or you came up with the thief part. And then I drew as another secondary character. It just came out of my head, the character Monsieur.
Uh-huh.
The older gentleman thief.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just sort of wanted to design that character because I thought it would be fun to draw an older man for a change.
Yeah.
And then from that, you just sort of took off and started.
Yeah, the urchins were important to me because of... I like the whole Artful Dodger aspect, and I didn't want her to be a loner. I didn't want her to be a lost child of Paris or whatever city she's in. I wanted her to belong to the city itself and to be, you know, to be sort of the undercurrent of the city. So
you were influenced by that weird underground Paris art people. What the people who, like, do theaters in the tunnels and stuff? They do, like, secret stuff?
Oh, yeah, I forget the name of them, but there's a fascinating group of people... primarily in Paris and but somewhat all around France, but they do strange things. Like they'll sneak into decrepit clock towers over the course of like months and repair the clocks and things like that. Or
they actually
repaired
a clock tower and they made them break it again because
because it was illegal to repair it. And they set up like full underground theaters, you know, in the sewers and things like that. They're very fascinating. I'm blanking on their name.
They're like some sort of guerrilla art project or something.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
So was that exit through the gift shop, or what was that documentary that about?
They had a puddle.
I haven't seen that. That's Banksy, right? And I think he might have been affiliated with them in some way. I'm not sure.
But they had an entrance that was disguised by a puddle.
Yeah, there's a part in Bandette where she's got an entrance to her underground, one of her underground lairs that's a puddle. She raises the puddle and it's underneath the puddle, and that's inspired by them because they had a disguised, they'd made a sewer grate that was somewhat sunken, but it was really just kind of a 3 or 4 inch deep box that they'd filled partially full of garbage and stagnant water. So if you looked at it, it looked like a stopped up drain, but it actually was the start of a stairway down into one of their projects.
Sounds very Perry the Platypus.
Yeah, that does sound familiar. Interesting.
But yeah, when we were creating Bandette, and it was one of the more collaborative beginnings between the two of us of us sharing ideas before we actually got started. A lot of times it's you write a script and then I draw it.
Mm-hmm.
For this it was just like, and we like Tintin and we like Danger Diabolique and I like To Catch a Thief and
Modesty Blaze
and all this, and we were just like, let's take everything we like and shove it all into one little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Bandette.
Yeah, because we had no expectations for the title whatsoever, because, I mean, not only was the title untested, but Monkey Brain was completely untested. So we, weren't sure how it was going to work out. So the number one thing we did was just say, no matter how this turns out, let's have a lot of fun doing it.
Right.
So, as you noted earlier, and I know that Murray was asking about it, Banana Sunday was also something that you two worked on together. That's right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was my first series from you two. I remember picking it up. I want to say I picked it up in back issue bins, but I maybe I got it.
It's okay to say that.
I'm trying to remember. My store is great for ordering stuff if you know what you want and you ask them, they'll get anything for you, but I'm not sure that Banana Sunday was one of the things I ordered or if I found it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Oni put out so much great stuff at the time. Like, I mean, they still put out great stuff, but there was a time when anything with the Oni stamp on it, I would be grabbing it and enjoying it, and Banana Sunday was so much fun. Me and my daughter would just sit and read it, and we'll still pull it out, and she still loves Chuck. No, Go-Go. She loves Go-Go. I love the
Go-Go.
The romantic Spider-Man is mine, but that was a that series was so much fun.
Yeah, Oni, that's actually, you reminded me that I'm doing more with Oni. We just announced a graphic novel that I'm doing with Ben Dewey. It's called I Was the Cat.
So I saw that yesterday. Yeah, tell us more about it.
Yeah, I saw that on your Twitter feed.
It's basically about, I started to notice how many famous people had cats in their hands, like paintings of, such and such great ruler, and there's a cat sitting there, and it seemed like it was almost shorthand for the dominant ruler.
Megalomaniac dictators?
Yeah.
Blofelds?
Right. And then I started to wonder, maybe since cats have 9 lives, maybe it was all the same cat.
Oh, God.
If it was all the same cat, then what was that cat doing? So I Was the Cat is, it's literal, and its meaning is, all those famous photos, paintings, things like that. The main character in I Was the Cat, Burma is his name, he was that cat. And it's the story of his life and what he was doing then, and more importantly, what he's doing now with the last of his 9 lives.
Wow. That's a very interesting concept.
Thank you.
And do you have any idea when that's going to be printed?
I'm not sure of the exact printing date, but I'm pretty sure we'll have it in time for San Diego Con. So.
Nice.
Excellent.
Nice. Nice, nice. That sounds fun. And it's like a full graphic novel.
Yeah, it's 151 pages of Ben Dewey art. Ben's in our studio as well. And if you haven't checked him out, he's a lot of fun. He's got an online series called the Tragedy Series, which is like a, you know, one panel gag strip per day, and it's hilarious. It's fantastic. I would look that up. It's actually going to be collected into a book coming out about a year from now.
Yeah. It's BenjaminDewey.com, I think.
Yeah. Or if you just look up tragedy series, it'll get it.
It's on a Tumblr.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if you could spell his last name for me.
D-E-W-E-Y.
Yep.
Quick, write that down. Well, Dewey, like, I like the Dewey. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. It's late. No, it's not late, but.
It's later for us than you.
That's true, so I have no excuses. All right.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to throw you under the bus there, man.
No, I'm used to the view. anyhow. I feel like there's so much more we could talk about here. I mean, something actually occurred to me, and I'm sorry to go completely off topic, and I know I don't want to put you on the spot here at all, Colleen, but one of the things I've noticed your style it's cartoony, it still has a realism aspect to it. I've noticed that's actually thanks to people like Bendis over at Marvel. A lot of that is coming into more mainstream comics. Is that something that you're glad for, or would you prefer to see your styles actually stay kind of on the fringes?
So you think that the cartoony style is coming more?
I do. I mean, I okay. He, yeah, you know, him like hiring like Sarah Michelli over an Ultimate Spider-Man, for instance.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I'm a big fan of cartooning. I'm influenced by comics throughout the 20th century, from some of the earliest comic strips to through the 80s, because you know that's when I was reading comics, was in the 80s. But I've read comics from the entire century. And I've taken a lot of influence from, like, gag illustrations from, like, Saturday Evening Post from the mid-century, or like, Playboy or New Yorker cartoons. And, of course, I was heavily influenced by Archie Comics because I read those when I was little. Also, Harvey Comics because I read those when I was little.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I'm always for art that is clean. Well, not clean necessarily, but expressive rather than representational. And that I think that's what you get when you have a more cartoon style is the expression. And you know, if you've read Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics, you know that he posits that there's a little bit more of a direct line into the brain of the reader. If it's the simpler the art is, the more direct the language is to the reader's brain, The more realistically you draw, the more you cut that off. It's sort of that uncanny valley thing, where the reader will sort of just see that as something other, rather than something that they're experiencing themselves. Did I express that well?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because as a writer, I have no idea how many different artists I've worked with. It must be. I'm getting an echo suddenly.
Yeah, we get that every once in a while. It'll go away.
Okay. I'm sure I've worked with over 200 artists at this point, and the main thing that's always been to me is can they tell the story? And sometimes, as much as I love him, Frank Frazetta is like one of the very few people who could have incredibly detailed comics that still told the story. Al Williamson was good with that too,
yeah,
in the DC days.
Oh, we lost Murray.
Oh, we lost Murray.
Murray's gone.
Okay. I'll get
him
back.
Bored of what I was saying.
How dare you insult Frazetta?
Valley, Frazetta's
one
of my favorites.
That was a compliment. He was one of the few that did it well.
Yeah, but as far as telling the story, some artists can't do that while remaining like busy and making sure that they do all of the sorts of cool art and things like that. That actually interferes with the story. That's why an Alex Toth can be better as a storyteller. Well, I don't want to name any bad names, but
if you look at someone who goes very busy, like Arthur Adams, I mean, but it's just it's so detailed, but at the same time, it does tell an incredibly great story.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are people that can handle it, and he's actually a really good example of how to handle it, because what he has a tendency to do is, no matter how much he's drawing, he still really stresses the central point. He brings your eye to that. So if you want to dwell on the art, you can. But if you want to move past this and just continue on the story, you can do that. Because there's different ways of looking at comics. And one way is I'm blanking on his name, the Cursed Pirate. Cursed Pirate Girl.
Jeremy.
Bastion.
Jeremy Bastion. Yeah.
You can stare at his art all day long. But you can also just read it quickly. And and when I read Cursed Pirate Girl, I do both. I'll read the story and enjoy it, and then I'll go back and read the artwork and enjoy that and enjoy it at a different level, because he's pretty good at presenting it on two different levels. But a lot of artists have a tendency to just fill a panel and not present the information.
Right.
Which is one of the reasons why... Will they explode?
Sorry, my kid just threw something at me.
Which is one of the reasons why when I do panel descriptions, I do have a tendency to say the focal point of this panel, blah, blah, blah. And so if the artist just wants to draw that, then that's fine.
And I've noticed that with Bandette, whether it's you, Colleen, drawing it, or like in the urchin chapter books, there's a central figure in there, but then there's also stuff going on in the background and on the sides and stuff.
Yeah, Paul often writes background business into his panels, and that's actually something that a lot of writers don't do. So it's something that, you know, working with him over the years, I've gotten really used to throwing something into a background, a little something, you know, just something going on back there.
Mm-hmm. There's often entire stories going on in the backgrounds in my scripts, and I think that's important, because I think it's essential at times to remember that whatever character you're reading, they exist in a world.
Right.
Which is one of the reasons that we do the urchin stories, is because, you know, some of these characters that have a two or three page urchin story might have only appeared in Bandette for, you know, one, two, three panels.
Right.
But I still want them to be people. And I like the thought of people reading Bandette and looking in the background and going, oh, that's Belda. I know her entire story. And I think that brings the book to a greater whole.
That's why, in a documentary, it's kind of cool to watch the people who aren't necessarily the focus of the documentary, but the people who inhabit their lives with that person. So.
Right. I think that's really important, because, I mean, too many times you'll read like a huge series, and then you'll realize that if the central character disappeared from the world would just quit.
Yeah.
They wouldn't, you know. You know, the central character was central to everything, and so there wasn't really a city around them, and I think that's kind of a loss to the character.
Oh, the Sandman books, some of the best issues were the ones that were not, it didn't have, had Morpheus in like one panel, maybe two panels or something.
Yeah, Neil's very good at that.
I love this.
Mr. Gaiman is. I don't know Neil at all.
I was going to say, you're out having lunch with American Gods, man. It's all good. All right. So we've talked about your upcoming stuff, the Prometheus Aliens crossovers. We've talked about Bandette. We've talked about some of the Adventure Time stuff you all are working on. You've got your book that's out there, Prepare to Die. We talked Evil Muffins. No, sorry. So what else? What else are we not giving you an opportunity to talk about, to touch on here today?
There's I Was the Cat, which we just went into at length.
I think I've touched on all the things that I can talk about.
Okay. I can't even remember what all you're working on. Me, I'm just working on Bandette. That's what I'm working on.
Yeah.
So I'm easy.
Yeah.
And when is the next installment coming out of that?
I just uploaded the files last night, so it's all up to Comixology in their schedule. So as soon as they get it prepared to go up, that's when it'll go up. So it usually takes them several weeks. So okay. Sometime in this next month.
Okay.
Nice.
Oh, that's an interesting process. I mean, you kind of touched on that. I hadn't really heard about that process. So you send them a chunk of files or a zip file or something like that with all the pages in there and all lettered and inked and stuff, and then they choose the
They have their technicians or whatever. They do that panel by panel reading thing, mm-hmm. so that it can be comfortably read on a phone. I think that's the main thing that they do before it goes live. They have a lot of comics that they have to do that.
Yeah,
for.
They do. Yeah.
Especially since like the Marvel and DC comics are coming out that same week.
Mm-hmm.
They have to get all of those done every week. They have a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why it can take a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Do they give you an opportunity to review it before it goes live?
Gosh, no, I hadn't even thought of that.
There's not really much to review. I mean,
they don't change anything.
They don't change anything.
They just sort of guide everybody along.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you don't submit it to Monkey Brain? Like, how does that, like...
Actually, I do. I send it to Chris, and he passes it along to Comixology. Okay. But that's mostly just a procedural thing.
Yeah, it's just our stage in the email, really.
That's just so I think that Comixology doesn't have to have multiple people, you know, with an FTP client.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Monkey Brain.
Go ahead, Maria. I'm sorry.
Oh, so yeah, no, like they just work with the Monkey Brain go-to guy then, and they expect files from Monkey Brain or
right, Chris and Allison.
Yeah, which makes sense, but they've got a zillion little companies all sending them.
Right. And then now they're doing the anybody can submit anything deal too now. So
yeah,
to Comixology. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like Comixology. I like the format of their digital. They were like the first digital reader for comics that I really went, I'm comfortable mm-hmm. reading this way.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. They definitely got it right ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember
read it on my phone, though. It's still too small. My eyes are...
Yeah, I never read it on my phone. I don't even have it installed. I just do it. I do it on the tablet.
I was actually really pleasantly surprised with how Bandette looks on my phone. I have an iPhone, so you know, it's I prefer it on my iPad, but mm-hmm. but my phone is the next best.
Yeah. Interesting.
So it's a very full schedule then for both of you over the next year or so.
Very much so, yeah.
Oh, we're going to be going to some shows over the next few months. We're going to go to Emerald City Con next week.
Cool.
And then we'll be special guests at San Diego this year.
Nice.
So we'll get the special treatment.
Special treatment.
Yeah, you guys did win an Eisner for Bandette, didn't you?
I heard that.
I was looking through there, and I'd forgotten that till just a second ago.
We did. We were nominated for four, mm-hmm. And we won one. That's cool.
That's great.
We were nominated for color and for best artist and for best new series.
Best new series overall, which was kind of an honor. I mean, it wasn't even best digital series. It was best new series overall nomination. So that,
and we won best digital.
We won best digital series, but not best overall series. I forget who that went to. Saga?
Was it Saga?
Probably Saga.
I think it was Saga.
Well deserved by Saga. That's amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That whole stuff is good.
That was what I expected. everything went the way I expected it.
Yeah. And best artist went to Chris Somney, who's a dear friend. So.
And David Aja.
Oh, yeah.
Or is it Aja? I don't even know.
I forget. But, yeah.
Yeah, Sammy does good work on Daredevil. I really like that.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He was part of our studio for a while, but he moved away, back. And it's really sad because he only sat like a couple of desks away from me, and if I mentioned anything artistic at all, like 10 minutes later he would come over and say, "Well, you said Hercules, so I did you a drawing of Hercules." And then so my desk there has all these little Chris Somni drawings that he just kind of whipped off. He's incredibly fast.
That's cool.
Stupidly fast.
Yeah, I think maybe the studio was glad to see him go just because he was making everybody mad.
Bad.
You're making us look bad, man.
Well, it'd be like he'd be in the studio, and it'd be like somebody would go, "Look, I finished a page today," and he'd go, "Yeah, I finished an issue."
That's a little bit of an exaggeration, but
yeah,
he's very, very fast.
Wow,
and excellent,
and a hell of a guy.
Yeah, it
was 2 days actually for an issue, not just one. So
yeah, right. Yeah, day and a half, let's say.
Here we go. I was the cat. Oh, cool cover. Love this. The cat.
Yeah, right.
Looks like the beard. It looks like August is when the drop date is on that.
You'll have an early copy.
Yeah, I think we're going to have maybe some advances at San Diego.
That's cool. Yeah.
Well, it's a shame you're not going to make it to Phoenix. That's a...
Oh, God. Yeah, we wanted to, but our...
Our schedule's just too full.
Yeah, that would be another week.
Yeah.
Of traveling and being at a show.
Well, plus you'd be here in June, which, as a Phoenix resident, I can say without any hesitation, sucks. So
you're really selling it for next year. Thanks.
Yeah.
Well, they usually do it in May. I was shocked that they did it. That they got pushed to June this year. So
I think I saw our good friend Phil Hester will be there, though.
As will Chris Roberson. So.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, I remember Chris talking about that.
Cool. Yeah, no, it's a great con. It's just it's one of those things where you're just really glad that it's an indoor situation.
I've been to a few of those. Yeah,
you know, be like in Minneapolis for one in January or something.
Yeah. Well, in Portland.
It's always nice here.
Yeah,
as long as you like rain. Well, yeah.
I used to live in Washington State and. In the south central of the Tri-Cities, Kennewick, Pasco, and Richland several years ago. That particular area was a desert, but I know the rest of the state was a lot of like that. So,
right.
And you can tell it's coming to the end of the interview when we start talking about the weather.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of other things to ask, but I don't want to take too much more of their time. So... let's see.
Well, honestly, again, when I dropped the email through the inbox on your site, I was like, well, you know, roll the dice. We'll see what happens. And I am really glad that it eventually made its way to you. I know that it got routed somehow to you, and I'm glad it did.
Yeah. It was great having you on.
Well, thank you. No, I enjoyed this stuff.
Yeah, and thanks, guys.
Yeah.
And I appreciate, Colleen, you also making the time for us and didn't even – didn't even think it was going to be possible to get you both here, and it's really cool. I didn't know you guys were married, so that was...
We're together.
Yeah, it's easy.
We're a team.
Unless you're writing together, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, in which case it's...
Yeah, then, yeah.
Duck.
you guys have anything else that you wanted to bounce off of Colleen and Paul before we let them back to their lives?
I think that's it.
Yeah, I've asked my questions. So. my feeble attempt, but.
Well, I'm looking forward to my Amazon shipment. Hopefully tomorrow, possibly Monday, with the Bandette book in it. And
nice.
I will personally keep my eye out for I Was the Cat as a cat person. So.
Yeah, that sounds like a real good story. I'll have to get that too.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And the very vague information you were able to provide on the aliens, etc. Crossover, we'll keep an eye out for those as well. It sounds like
sorry to be so vague on some things.
No, that's we understand that completely. Good.
We're not bleeding cool, so we're not.
Yeah. We don't make things up or whatever. We understand. So,
every chance we get, we'll be picking up when Bandette hits our inboxes.
Yes, that's why I had the subscription. Yeah. I don't want to miss it.
Mm-hmm. I should be putting up an urchin story fairly soon as well from one of our band of friends. Yeah. I don't know who's next.
Eeny, meeny, miny, moe.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun working those stories because another reason that I did them actually is because I have a ton of artists that I want to work with,
mm-hmm.
but some of them there's just to go to them and say, hey, we should do a series, or could you do an entire issue? It's impossible. But if hey, can you do two pages? Then usually they can make room for that, and then we have the fun of working together. So that's a lot of fun too.
Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah.
And then you can add that to your resume.
Yes.
That's right.
Work with so-and-so.
There you go. All right. Well, I guess we'll close this out and let you guys go and do my spiel, or we can wait till you guys leave, however you want to do it.
Perhaps we should sign off then.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. So
I hope we can. I hope we can reach out to you again in a few months when other stuff has dropped, and pick your brains a little bit more.
That'd be fun. Yeah.
Try to be a little bit less Chris Farley-ish with you.
I like Chris Farley.
Yeah.
All right.
I remember that time you were with the Wings.
Well, yeah, it's been great having you on. So. Yeah.
Well, thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah. Well, this should be out on Monday, unless some kind of technical difficulty, but shouldn't be.
Okay.
We'll make sure I send you guys a link, or Murray or Caleb can, one of us can anyway, and let you know when it's out.
Great.
So, all right. Thanks. Cool. Thanks again for coming on.
Hey.
Right.
Thanks, fellas.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, that was an awkward last part.
It's always awkward.
Yeah.
Suck.
Anyway, let's close this up. I got kids keep trying to come in here for something. I don't know what they want.
Kid.
Better be something bleeding.
Yeah,
he's hiding now. Anyway, I'm just kidding, by the way. Anyway, as always, you can contact us at podcast@talesfromthelongbox.com, or you can check us out on the Facebook page. Facebook, just do a searchy for the Tales of the Long Box, and we're on there. Or you can comment on the actual episodes. I'm looking forward to seeing if we get up to over 100 people download this one with them on it. I'll have to make sure that I do the SEO stuff so Google catches it better. But that's about it for this week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. And we're out.